Sitting opposite me, beloved listeners, is Australia's most prominent and most perpendicular playwright, David Williamson. I've known David since he was 6 foot 6. Decades ago, I used to hang around Swinburne Tech, helping out with the first film school in Australia. And David was a lecturer there doing, I think, thermodynamics
and fluid mechanics in the mechanical engineering department.
Whatever the hell they might be.
Yeah.
And so I knew him even before he was famous, and our lives have intersected from time to time. We had that wonderful trip around China with Jack Thompson and both his wives.
Both his wives. And the Chinese had to call one of them his personal assistant, didn't they? Yes.
And who else was on that? There was Noni Hazelhurst.
Noni was on, yeah. It was quite a trip. And I remember one late night conversation you and I and Jack had, when he was asking for life advice, and you gave him some very sage advice. I forget what it was, but...
You've never taken sage advice from me because I understand you're going to retire again. But I'll deal with that in just a minute. I don't approve of retirement. It was the one thing that John Howard and I both detested. His was enforced, and I've refused to do it. Of course, the other thing was we collaborated on Don's Party.
Absolutely, and a very good collaboration too. I think that they still replay the film now and then when there's an election pending.
They had Don's Party still, yes. David.
Yeah.
And it's worn very well, hasn't it?
Yes, it was. You collected a superb cast there, and Bruce is a terrific director, and
And we should point out it was shot in a real house in real time, pretty much. You know, we shot it in sequence, which is most unusual.
Very unusual, and very unusual to make it so cinematic in such a surrounding. But we did have McAlpine as our DOP, who was very good at layering shots. Like there was a foreground, a middle ground, a background. Something was happening all the time.
And we had an extraordinary cast, as you mentioned. We made a cinema actor out of Graham Kennedy, for example.
And he was very nervous about it, as I remember. He didn't really know whether he was an actor or not. He knew he was a television presenter, but he felt a bit intimidated in the presence of these professional actors. But in fact, he was terrific, I thought.
And internationally, he was often picked out as effectively the star
by
people who had no idea,
yes,
about his televisual background. Anyway, it's time to talk about what you're up to now, and you're having a sort of a storm before the lull, aren't you?
So, the lull is going to happen, but there's a burst of activity at the start of this year. It's my 50th year since my first full-length play at La Mama, so I count myself as a 50-year career. And tonight, Family Values opens at the very theatre where my career virtually took off, when John Bell did his wonderful production of The Removalists in what was then called the Nimrod Theatre and is now called the Griffin Theatre. So that's very sentimental. Then a bit later, the ensemble is doing my new play, Crunch Time, and Melbourne Theatre Company and Queensland Theatre Company are co-producing a revival of Emerald City. So it's all happening in a few months and then it's all over.
But why? Why is it all over? You've done this before, David.
No,
I did spit the dummy a decade ago.
Well, yes, that was because I really had a health problem that was stress exacerbated. I had a heart rhythm problem, but... The miracles of modern medicine, they hauled me into an operating theatre and ablated some bad sections of the electrical circuitry, and my heart has performed reasonably well ever since.
You got a pacemaker like me?
No, I haven't got a pacemaker, but they got rid of the arrhythmia more or less and got me on the right drugs. So I felt rejuvenated and felt that I better start working again. But now, after 50 years... I want to go out when it's like a cricket batsman wants to go out while they're still making runs. Well, all of these players are booking very well. People are still coming. I don't want to be wandering around at 99 wondering why the theatres are half empty or a third empty or totally empty.
Let's remind the listener about Emerald City before we look at the newies. What's the proposition is?
The Proposition is an innocent Melbourne writer, well, not so innocent, and his journalist wife decide to move from Melbourne to Sydney. The lure of the harbour city seems to get to Colin, but his wife Kate is a good Melbournean. She thinks Melbourne is the moral centre of the universe and she should not leave. But he convinces her and they go. And then things reverse. Colin finds Sydney is not quite the glittering wonder city he thought it was, and his wife Kate starts to take to it with a vengeance. It's about marriage and the strains in marriage when two partners are working. It's also about commerce versus art. What's the difference? Is there a difference? Colin sort of thinks he's going to make a mozzer of money if he goes to Sydney because they are much more commercially minded up there.
David, you, Graham Kennedy and I left Melbourne for Sydney and we were regarded as traitors. Do you remember the criticism that the three of us attracted for reneging?
Yes. It was weird. I mean, we were seen as terrible traitors because no one in their right mind would leave Melbourne for that dreadful fleshpot city of hedonists to the north. I think there's always been a slight complex Melbourne has had about Sydney. I think if Sydney people went and lived in Melbourne, no one would take any notice, would they?
No, yeah. we it was sort of there's a lot of these two city things, you know, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Petersburg, Moscow, and often one city is completely indifferent to the anxieties of the other.
Yes, I think, well, Melbourne worries far too much about Sydney. And it shouldn't, because the Melbourne I left in 1979 is certainly a different Melbourne now. It's a very good, sophisticated city. It's one I enjoy going back to, and it's got lots and lots going for it. But there still seems to be that thing.
This incarnation of Emerald City stars Belinda Giblin. I haven't seen Belinda for
No. She's in Family Values that opens tonight.
She's wonderful.
She's a fabulous actor, and she's playing the wife of a federal court judge who's far more radical than he is. And when things get nasty in the family, she is forced to take over.
So, give me the gist of Family Values, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, well, it's the old trope: get people, same as Don's Party, get people who shouldn't be in the same room together, in the same room together, can't avoid it, and drama is sure to happen. It's the same thing with Family Values. There's a federal court judge having his 70th birthday. His wife, played by Belinda Giblin, goes along with this. His three offspring turn up, and they're all wildly different. They've turned out, one son, two daughters, very different. But daughter turns up with the thing that's been landed on her is she has got a hideaway, a refugee who's been brought here under medevac, fled community detention because a certain minister is about to send her back to Nauru, where she's had acute psychological distress. And so radical daughter turns up with an Iranian refugee and says, give us the keys of your holiday house, I've got to hide her, right in the middle of his 70th birthday. Now, the other siblings don't take to this too well, especially his Christian Wright son. And you're getting the message.
Yes, I am. Yes. And you're still blazing away with both barrels on political issues, aren't you?
Well, in this case, yes. I was fired up, I think, the treatment that we've meted out to those poor unfortunates on Nauru and Manus has been unconscionable. It wouldn't matter a jot if we brought them all here tomorrow. The boats wouldn't start up again. But it's just a point of pride by our present government that none of them are ever going to come to Australia.
Tell me about crunch time.
Yeah, family is something I know something about because I've had five children, their partners, and 14 grandchildren. So I always enjoy writing about families where our most powerful emotions are usually generated.
For good and ill.
I mean,
it's the sharpest of two-edged swords, the family, isn't
it? Absolutely. So in crunch time, Dad has made a stupid mistake. Sibling rivalry has always been lurking in his family. One son thinks he's less loved than the other, and when something happens that he thinks illustrates that, it's all bets off. He's not talking to his dad. The dad can't see the grandkids. It's horror time. And then dad finds out he's got 6 months to live and desperately wants his family back together again. It sounds grim, but there is a lot of black comedy as well.
David, if we go back to the optimism in Don's party, okay, the evening finishes up getting a little bit sour and indeed the election victory doesn't happen. But there was, of course, a time of optimism that we remember well. Did you ever expect Australia to become the country it is?
No, Philip. It's been really puzzling. The last 10 years of Australian history and world history have been... it's been a difficult time for me, I think, to cope with, and I think a lot of people to cope with. I think... the political landscape. I mean, someone like
the cruelty, the way cruelty of refugees,
yes,
is appalling. But we still haven't dealt with reconciliation properly.
No,
we're still not a republic. I mean, heavens above.
No, it's. I mean, even Harry's got the sense to flee from the royal family, but we. We desperately cling on to it, and it's rather sad. We're not a mature nation until we become a mature nation. Also, inequality is growing at a galloping pace all over the world. Climate change is real, as even our Prime Minister grudgingly admits now, and it's a huge problem
for
our future.
Well, he admits it one day and then changes his mind the next.
Yes, yes. When his right-wingers get to him and say, "Don't give an inch." It's not real. Well, it is real, and everybody knows it's real. When you're sitting in Sydney for 3 weeks under a smoke cloud, you know it's real. It's sad that political power is in the hands of populists all over the world at the moment.
David, you and I were part of a very large movement to create an Australian film industry, an Australian theatre, as a buffer zone against the Americanisation of Australian culture. We've lost that battle well and truly, haven't we?
I think so, yeah. I think that, not totally. I think, thankfully, there are still Australian players on our stages. There are a new generation of writers. I think a heartening thing, for instance, last year, 20% of our main stage plays doing very well were written by First Nation people. So it is happening to some extent out there. The film industry is struggling, I think.
I remember when we were agitating that 90% of the box office in Australia, the film box office, went to American films, leaving 10% for the rest of the world, including Australia. I don't think those figures have changed much.
They haven't, no. It's very hard to compete with the Hollywood juggernaut, particularly when they pick the eyes out of our talent and the rest of the world's talent and draw them to America.
Some of them, of course, make a great contribution. Beresford leaves us, goes over and becomes a very significant director.
You can't be...
Tender Mercies wasn't a bad effort. Yeah. Don McAlpin, for heaven's sake, seems to have shot every second epic.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's the big league, and you certainly can't blame talent for wanting to go there and test themselves out and try themselves out. That's fine. But the ones that do come back and contribute to our industry, that's terrific too.
How did you feel in the last few weeks, or how are you feeling about the leadership crisis over bushfires?
Well, it's been very sad. I mean, look... I don't think anybody in their right mind would deny that climate change is happening, that it is a big problem for the future, and that it does contribute to the severity of this fire, the like of which we've never seen in terms of the burnt areas of Australia, and it's going to get worse in the future. And of course, Australia taking action on climate change by itself is not going to do much. The whole world has to get together on this one. But if Australia shirks its responsibility and says, well... we're not doing much. You can do it all. Well, the world is going to say, well, you're the one that's burning. Shape up. It has been sad, and it has been sad to see, quite frankly, the blatant attempt to blame our bushfire catastrophe on lack of burning off and arsonist when everybody knows that arsonists were responsible for about 2% of it, and burning off wouldn't make all that much difference.
Yeah. One of the things about your writing over all these decades is you've always had a great sense of humour. I mean, Don's Party is hilariously funny as well as all the other things it is. And you always use humour, not to sort of sugarcoat, but I think it's a method of communication. Are you still feeling funny in the face of all these negatives?
I think without a certain amount of black humour, it would be hard to get through the world as it presently is. Yes, the answer is yes. I think the human being, one of its great redeeming features of humanity is the ability to laugh and see the ridiculous side of things. So even in the blackest of moments, I do try and use humour. And the kind of humour I like is, I think someone said, well, what is a comedy? Well, a comedy is watching people behave badly when they don't realise they're behaving badly, but we do. And so the audience knows the actors are behaving badly, but they don't. And there's a lot of bad behaviour in Don's Party.
David, I cannot believe you'll be able to stop. I just can't see you.
Oh, look, I'm
turning your back.
Well, look,
on your workspace and what you damn well write on these days.
You're partly responsible, Philip, because as I'm exercising every morning, I'm listening to a late night live on podcast. I mean, I can fill up my day gainfully very easily these days. There is a lot of good stuff to listen to. There's a lot of books to read. There's 14 grandchildren. There's 5 kids. I'm rather relieved I won't have to go through the stresses of any more first nights, all of that. It's been exciting. I've had a dream run. I've had, I think, 53, 54, 55 plays.
Almost all of which have been very successful.
Yes, yeah, and they've had good productions. I've had the cream of Australia's theatre talent working on them. So I've been enormously fortunate. I've had A.B. Facey wrote a book called The Fortunate Life, but he was being ironic because his life was hellish at the start. But I've been lucky. My father said, for heaven's sake, David, don't do what I did. I worked in the bank for 47 years and hated every day of it. Make sure you do something that you like doing. And I was lucky enough to do it.
Well, David, I've been lucky enough to know you and to admire you for decades. And I'm so pleased that you're in good working order. Gladys and Potties, please note you can see Emerald City, Brisbane's Queensland Theatre, from February the 8th to the 29th. It'll be afterwards at the MTC at the Melbourne Theatre Company from March 6th to April 18. Family Values, played at Sydney's Griffin Theatre until the 7th of March. And Crunch Time will be staged from the 14th of February to the 9th of April at the Ensemble in Darlinghurst. Good on you, David.
Thanks so much, Philip. And keep up the good work yourself.